Well, good morning. It's a little past 8:30, and we're going to check in now with our good buddy, Mr. Patrick Doyle. He's a local area counselor and does a great job. Every time you're on the air, we get comments. You want to read some of them? No, he's a local area. And the number to his office is 301-5500. And the number here today, if you want to talk to him, you don't have to make an appointment. You don't have to pay for it. 776-5368. Hi, bud.
Hi. How you doing?
Good, man. Good to see you.
You too.
Abuse, huh?
Yeah. Abuse. It you happens.
Know, boy, does it ever. It comes in many forms, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's not just the... It's not just
physical. We think the word abuse is, somebody's getting, knocked around a little bit. Mm-hmm. It's not that. I mean, it comes in many. Do we know we're abusing people?
I don't know. I mean, I think a lot of people, know that they've been abused. I don't think that part of the nature of being an abuser is that you don't really get what you're doing.
Okay.
You have to have denial about it because it's innately... contraindicated or it goes against our nature to hurt another person. You got to build a wall against your conscience, against your guilt, against what is right. I mean, the vast majority of our society, now in other cultures where abuse is more common, it might not be so. But in our culture, I mean, abuse is not sanctioned. It's not approved. It's against the law. There's all these prohibitives against it. So to do it, it's like the guy who gets a DUI, No one ever got a DUI, and when they were pulled over by the police officer, no one ever said, "You mean it's against the law to drink and drive?"
Oh, yeah, right.
I mean, everybody knows it's right. Against the law. So to do that, you got to exercise some denial. Oh, I won't get caught. Oh, it's no big deal. Oh, I haven't had. So in the same way, somebody who abuses has to build a defense against what they're doing. They have to build a defense against what they're doing to the person. They have to build a defense against how the other person feels. They have to build all kinds of defenses. So that, in essence, makes them unaware of what they're doing. And for somebody who's trying to look at abuse in a logical term, they're going to be awfully confused because abuse is not logical. It's pathological. It is the result of somebody who is sick taking that sickness and inflicting it upon you. And what we know is hurt people hurt people. Mm. Almost all the abusers I've dealt with have been people who have been deeply hurt themselves. And it's a real difficult balance to look at an abuser and say, let's forgive them. Or, let's have compassion or empathy on them because look at what they did. But the truth is no one abuses because everything was great for them either. So, if we really want to deal with abuse, we not only have to deal with the person who's been victimized, we have to deal with the abuser. Sometimes I've seen abusers who have what I call malignant denial. Now, malignant denial is denial that's so bad that it's going to kill you. It's barring a divine intervention, it won't change. Mm. And, I've seen enough people over the years to know that it exists. I think my father had it. I think my father had malignant denial. He never, ever really changed. He was still an angry, abusive person.
Do you think abusers, isn't there something deep down in their nature, deep down in their innermost being that says, they really know that they're this way, but mm-hmm. yeah, they deny it? Mm-hmm. And the reason I ask that is because isn't that in direct conflict with the Christian faith, because I am becoming, I don't know, I don't even want to go down this road.
You're already halfway there.
I know. The door's open, I'm stepped in. But
come on, Peter.
Well, no. I'm just, I am so tired of playing church when there are people dying in the congregation, mm-hmm. and most of it at all is they're living 2, 3, 4, and 5 lives.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that is, I think there are people who are abusers that would love to get free, but they've never been given the invitation to mm-hmm. get free.
Mm-hmm. I think that is an issue. I think there are some abusers who feel trapped. I think there are abusers who are using the church to absolutely deny their behavior. And I can tell you from personal experience in terms of folks I've talked to that there are many, many churches that get into counseling with couples where there's abuse involved or families where there's abuse involved. And I'm shocked at how many times that the church wants to sweep it under the rug and say, oh, let's not file a police report when somebody's been beat up. Okay, somebody gets beat up in your family, Christian or not, you should file a report. Okay, that's violence. Somebody shouldn't get beat up in a Christian home to start with. So if they're getting beat up, we need to involve the authorities. I really believe that. I've seen a lot of families get hurt because they push it off. They don't do it. And the church isn't telling, oh, we'll take care of it. We'll take care of it. And then 2 weeks later, there's nobody around anymore, and the cycle starts all over again. So,
well, I have to say this, and again, please don't let this be a reflection on any particular church or pastor.
It's not.
It's not. I don't want people to think that. Because when you talk in these levels, it people, oh, you know, this, you know, they're trying to zero it in. Mm-hmm. But I have become frustrated with the fact that churches say one thing and do another. Churches really don't dive into this area. Mm-hmm. They really don't counsel this area. Mm-hmm. They really don't uncover it. Mm-hmm. The slick answer is, we'll pray for you, throw a couple of scriptures at it, and call it healed.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't done a thing make anybody accountable.
Right. Well, here's the thing. These situations are long-term. And they're messy.
Yeah.
They're not something that you're going to take care of quickly. And this is, again, I think one of the things that I see. It's not just the church. It's our culture in general. I think our church is reflecting who we are. Because remember, the church is made up of us.
And we don't have time. We don't have patience.
Exactly. We don't have the energy available to get involved. And, you know, the truth is, a family who has an abuse situation is going to need somebody to talk to on probably a daily or every other day basis for a long time. So where does that come from? You know, are there other people in the church who have been hurt and abused who have survived that could, you know, bear one another's burdens? You know, this is what the scripture commands us to do, to bear one another's burdens, confess one to another. And so these kind of things in my mind are really important. The problem is it's not part of our cultural mandate. And so it really takes the move of God in someone's life for you to care that much about somebody else, to sacrifice your own life, because that's what it will turn into. And I'm telling you, but Jesus said, you know, when you die, that's when you live.
All right, we're talking to Patrick Doyle about abuse. If you want to join us and remain anonymous, we'll respect that. Our number is 776-5368. You know, there's so much that pops up here. One is, I'm not too sure if intervention therapy isn't becoming, quite frankly, the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's a whole nother topic. But I'm playing off the fact that we don't have the time. We don't have the training. We want quick fix. It's the 28-foot mentality.
Right.
You order your hamburger, you drive 28 feet, you pick it up.
Mm-hmm.
We want to go to one counseling session and get fixed. We want to take one pill and have the pain go away. I mean, that's the culture that we live in. But let's talk about forms of abuse or types of abuse. We are, like I said at the beginning of the show, we think, well, somebody kind of knocking somebody around.
Right.
There's mental, there's physical, is there spiritual?
Oh, absolutely. It's it's very prevalent. Because, you know, if an abuser can use spiritual things to control you, they're in position A. A lot of abusers, particularly in the church, will use this. And I don't mean this is the only way it happens, but this is the most common thing that I see. Is that men who are in church and quote-unquote, and I use that quote specifically, quote-unquote Christians, they use the, you should submit to me, and if you submit to me, everything will be fine, guilt, spiritual control on the wife who's taking the abuse. And then the wife feels guilty if they don't submit because, you know, it's wrong spiritually, it's wrong to God. Meanwhile, what they're submitting to is somebody abusing them. You know,
what about the other way around, though? The wife who abuses the husband spiritually because he's not this, he's not that, he's you know, he's not the leader.
Yeah, that absolutely happens, too. I mean, again, you have to be careful about that. I mean, somebody who's nagging is different than somebody who's abusing. And I'm talking about somebody who's emotionally intimidating.
Mm-hmm.
I'm talking about somebody who's using violence. I'm talking about somebody who's using finances to control you. I'm talking about somebody who doesn't allow you to have any say-so in anything. It could go either way. It could be the wife or it could be the husband. Those things go both ways. But I'm saying in my experience, it's mostly men in the church falls into this. I don't know that they do it willingly or knowingly, but a lot of times they fall into supporting the guy in that abuse and saying, you know, yeah, she needs to submit to you, rather than really looking at the issue. And
covering up something?
I think so.
What?
I think they're covering up the fact that they don't want, if the wife will submit and the guy will be happy, then this can go away. The truth is, it's going to take a lot of energy to look into that marriage and say, you know what, Billy, Bobby, whatever, mm-hmm. you're really out of line. You aren't, if your marriage is in a ditch, dude, the first place you ought to be looking is you. That's how God designed it. I'm the leader, right? If I let it into a ditch, I should be looking at me first, not blaming her. But you see, now that opens up a whole can of worms. Now I got to deal with Billy, and I got to mentor him, and I have to disciple him, and I have to spend time with him, and I have to help him learn how to be a good husband if I have that knowledge, or I got to find somebody to help him. That's step one. We haven't even addressed the person who's being abused. So we haven't addressed all the ripple effects in the family. We haven't talked about how it affects kids. We haven't talked about what's going on with the kids. How are they? I mean, so you're talking about a lot of stuff that goes on. And you know, again, it's even true in counseling. A lot of times, counselors don't want to get into it. They don't want to deal with all that stuff. Mm-hmm. And I say, here's the deal. I'm not going to deal with it, but I have an almighty, glorious, perfect, beautiful God who has all the time, who has all the power, who has all the resources, who has all the insight necessary to deal with these situations. I can trust him for that.
Why do we have such a hard time giving him this stuff?
Because we're afraid that he's going to reject us. He'll see the bad in us and he'll run away, which really, again, gets me back to something else I talk about all the time, which means you really don't understand the gospel. I mean, I know that you know it, but if you believe God's going to run away from you, you have not understood the gospel. The gospel is not about him running away. It's about him making you perfect by what he did, not by what you're going to do. You can't hold on to it. He says, I am the author and I am the perfecter. What do you have to do with that? Nothing. He's going to take care of it. So when you start putting it into, you're going to take care of it, and you're going to do this, and you're going to do that, and I'm going to, that's when the slide starts.
Patrick Doyle with us. We're talking about abuse, and I know this is a very sensitive topic, and it comes in many forms, mm-hmm. Intimidation, emotional, mm-hmm. Spiritual.
Sexual. Mm-hmm. Sexual what? Abuse.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I want to talk about some of the things that I see abuse doing to people long term. And let me say before we get there, let me say this one other thing. Research has said this, and my experience bears this out to be true. Women who are abused as kids in childhood, who have difficult childhoods, and again, that abuse may be on a spectrum from mild to extreme, but anybody who's been a woman who's been abused early in life, what happens when you're young is you build what we call in counseling containment. You put a container around that pain because it's so intense you can't handle it. So you contain it. Okay, you learn how to shut it out. What we find in research is that women who have been abused in between their early 30s and their early 40s tend to lose containment. In other words, you start to see symptoms of that hurt, symptoms of that trauma, symptoms of that pain start to impact your life. Whereas before it didn't ever seem to impact you. And women start to think, what's going on with me? Well, why is this happening?
Is the menopausal season part of the acceleration of this stuff?
I think sometimes it could be, but I think sometimes this...
I mean, you talk to Nisha Jackson, and then you know, these women actually feel like they're going crazy.
Exactly. Well, I think a lot of times what happens is that the breaking down of containment is actually sometimes misdiagnosed as menopause, when really it's really about the emotional pain coming to the surface. They can't get away from it. And, of course, having constant emotional pain will alter you physically.
You know, it's interesting you'd say this, because I think there's something that bears support of what you're saying. Mm-hmm. I have become alarmed mm-hmm. Why good marriages fall apart during that age.
Right.
They've been married mm-hmm. maybe 20, 25 years, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden there is a total meltdown.
Right. Well, and you couple this with men who have been abused or hurt as children, they tend to lose their containment from early 40s to early 50s, which is when you talk about guys having midlife crisis. I think more often than not, what midlife crisis is guys having stuff coming up from the past that they're not really aware of makes them really uncomfortable. So what do? They try to distract. I need a new car. I need a new wife. I need another job. I need something. But really, it's not about being unhappy with what you have. It's about stuff coming up inside of you that you have no way to cope with. So you couple that happening with a guy from early 40s to early 50s and a woman from early 30s to early 40s.
Bingo.
And you have this disintegration happening. And when you look at...
I think there's a generational template that lays over this.
I think so.
Because we have given birth, I say we baby boomers have given birth to the latchkey kid.
That's right.
You bring Bob Justin here and you bring, adults of divorce.
Right.
And you add that into the equation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a mixing pool of all kinds of emotions mm-hmm. that results in, quite frankly, abuse.
Right. So when you look back at the 60s and the 70s, let's say 70 would be what? 30 years?
35.
Right in the middle there.
Mm-hmm.
You look at what was happening in the 70s with the transition in society. Look at how many people were abused coming up, the hangover of the 60s, and how kids were treated and the shift in things. And, you know, so you see that there's the opportunity is there. So there's a lot of abuse that happens. It's way more than people think. It's way more. I mean, people think, oh, it's like 3% of the population. No, I think it's much higher than that, because if you take into account, you know, from mild to extreme, what we think of abuse, we tend to think only of the extreme cases, you know, the person that was locked in their closet and,
right.
you know, all that.
Yeah.
But the truth is, you know, you can be abused in a home that's seemingly perfect. And this is the story I hear about. Oh, I had a great childhood. And then we start investigating, and it's like, well, maybe it wasn't so great.
Well, I think there's a let's go back to the central theme here.
Okay.
And that is this. Can God heal the scars and the wounds of abuse?
I'm sitting here. Absolutely, he can. I mean,
somebody, you know, I have to tell you, I just feel this in my spirit, but I, you know, there's a lot of women out there that we're talking to, and I don't mm-hmm. mean to single out women. There's
right.
probably men too,
right?
That are just trapped. They have contained mm-hmm. this thing. And they, quite frankly, have lost hope. They go out of church out of fear and responsibility and respect, mm-hmm. not out of hope anymore.
Right.
How do you get the hope switch back on
right.
in their life?
Well, and again, I think you know, hope is something that comes from an intimacy with God. Now, this is one of the things I wanted to try to get to today, is that if you've been abused, your ability to have intimacy with anybody is damaged. Your ability to trust is damaged. Somebody who you trusted has hurt you. So it damages your trust. And so if your trust is damaged, that's not just with humans. That's also with God. So what we tend to do is we try to get it worked out with humans instead of getting it worked out with God. If I can just, you know, if I this person and I can get it together, then, you know, this will be okay and my life will be... No. If you don't first get it together with God, you'll never get it together with another human being. I have a real strong belief that intimacy with others is only possible, real true intimacy, is only possible after you have had intimacy with God. Because that is the source of your strength to take the risk that is required to have intimacy with another human being. So, you know, this issue of intimacy with God becomes paramount, and that's where the hope comes from to deal with these issues. So think about it. So someone hurts you, someone takes advantage of you. How can you bring about justice?
All right, let me do it. We're going to run out of time here.
Okay.
I'm getting stuff, and we're getting things printed to us here on the computer screen mm-hmm. that I'm reading this, and I, quite frankly, don't know how to translate this so that we can read it on the air.
Uh-huh.
The seriousness of this issue. Is there any resources about women abusing men?
Yes, there are. And, you know, but off the top of my head, I couldn't tell you where they're at. I mean,
okay.
There's a couple of books that I have in my office that
okay.
are about that. I've done some programs in the past, Women's Alternatives to Violence. I started a program for that. So I know there's resources out there, and if somebody
okay.
gave me a call at my office, I could hook you up.
All right, 301-5500 is the number to Patrick's office, and give him a little time because he leaves the studio. He drinks about 40 cups of coffee, eats all of our donuts, and gets to the office about 4 in the afternoon. Just kidding. All right. Now, This next one says it all, and I'm not going to give the details here because I don't want people to be able to connect any dots.
Right.
But the bottom line is this. At what point do you draw a line in the sand, no more, because the long-term effect could even disable you?
Well, I think the moment you realize you're being abused is the moment you say enough. But here's the problem. For somebody who's abused...
But people don't know what to do when they discover it.
That's right. The people who are abused are in a fearful situation. Mm-hmm. Abusers always use some form of intimidation, some form of control. So there's a lot of people out there listening that will know what I'm talking about when I say that, when I talk about the crazy-making mindset that happens to somebody who's living with an abuser. Because it's always your fault. You can never do it right. It's always back to you. And there's this, it's like they have Teflon. You know, nothing sticks to them. Everything sticks to you. And you start to then doubt your own perception of reality. You start to doubt your own thoughts. So if you're in that position, you can't really cope with the situation because you got no strength. They erode that right out under you. So that's why it's imperative that you have somebody outside of that circle that you can talk to and get honest, real feedback. And not somebody who's just going to throw scripture verses at you, but somebody who's going to walk arm in arm with you right on through that. And who would be with you if when it's time to confront the abuser.
I think there a part of this, folks, is this, and those of you who feel trapped, you really do need third-party help.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody really knows what they're doing. And I realize you're only one person,
right.
Patrick, and you have a lot of associates you work with.
Right.
And you can certainly refer and get people taken care of. But they need a plan.
Right.
They need direction.
Right.
They may have drawn a line in the sand. All right, now it's time for me to do something.
Right.
But they need a
plan. Well, not only do they need a plan, they need somebody right behind them who keeps saying, it's going to be okay. I'm going to be with you. It's going to be okay. I'm going to be with you. Because here's the thing. It's such a huge fear factor involved in somebody making that confrontation. If they don't have somebody they know they can trust and who's helped them find safety, they'll probably never do.
All right, let's take one comment. Hi, Cheryl. Go ahead.
Hi. I just wanted to comment that what Patrick is saying is exactly right. I grew up in a physically abusive home. I married a spiritually, physically, and mentally abusive man.
Mm.
And when I got out of that situation, I kind of devoted my life to helping women and children who have been abused and have worked in two different organizations that help people like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a power thing. They trick you into believing that everything is your fault and that somehow you deserve it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why it's so hard to convince someone that's in a situation like that to get out of it.
Right.
And I just want to say to all the listeners, don't give up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Right. And reach out.
Eventually, they'll get it.
Right.
And don't get angry with them if they don't get it the 10th time, because the 11th time, they'll get it.
All right. Thanks, Cheryl.
There you go.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, there you go. Person of experience.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, again, to deal with the abuse, here's the other thing. This is may sound scary, but, you know, if you've been abused and you're harboring resentment, you need to repent of your resentment. Because remember, forgiving them is not about saying what they did was okay. It'll never be okay. What it is it's going to God and asking Him to deal with your need, legitimate need, for vengeance and justice. Those are legitimate needs. The problem is you can't get it done. That's something that only God can do.
Okay. Then, you know, you got to be careful too, quite frankly, folks. You could go get help. Well, I'm going to say something here. This is going to, oh, man, I hate this. But it has to be said.
I love it.
Well, you know, I have gotten people in my office who legitimately was seeking help in an abusive situation.
Right.
And were told by spiritual advisors that part of your, it's not what's happening. You're under some form of judgment. This is happening to you because you were prodigal, or you were this, or you were that, or you're not holding the line of the tenets of faith. I mean, when I get when you get abuse on top of abuse, you want to, you know,
you want to abuse.
I don't mean to lighten that, but man, it's just gas on the fire.
It is, and see, that's one of my big fears is that the church. I don't know that. I think sometimes it's out of ignorance. I think sometimes it's out of a bad theology.
Yeah,
they make the situation worse, and that's why I say. You know, if you're having an abuse situation, go to somebody who knows what they're talking about and is a believer.
I find it so interesting that we're willing to forgive the biggest sin in the world, but not one of our saints that is mixed up.
Right.
Somehow there's more rules put on that salvation than there is on somebody that just comes off the street and wants to get saved.
Well, again, I think that's a result of that misunderstanding of the gospel. Like, you're going to make it better. You're going to hold on to your salvation. You didn't have anything to do with getting it in the first place. That's God's work. So if you realize it's God's work, you can let it go and say, okay, God, we're going to watch and see what you do now. What else are you going to do to bring about your perfection, bring about your will, bring about your glory, make us sanctified? And so here's the bottom line. Yes, you absolutely can heal from abuse. I'm living proof. I should be a statistic. My mom died when I was 10. My dad was a violent alcoholic. I was on my own. I shouldn't be here, but God is gracious, and God sought me out. I didn't seek him out.
Mm-hmm.
Go to him. He's the only source, excuse me, of strength you have, and reach out to somebody who has wisdom, who is a believer, who knows this stuff, not just somebody who's in a position of power. Make sure they know what they're talking about, and test them.
All right, 301-5500, the number to Patrick Doyle. Thanks, pal.
Yeah, by the way, I'm doing a seminar this weekend. At the Crisis Pregnancy Center. It's going to be this weekend on Saturday. And I'll be speaking. Bill Gallagher will be speaking. And Dale Metter, my pastor, will be speaking. And you can call the Crisis Pregnancy Center for more information.
Okay, thanks, man.
You bet.